Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 10, Federal IT with Tom Temin. Here we go. Today our guest is Tom Temin. How you doing, Tom?
Great to be with you.
All right. Well, hey, Tom, I invited you up because you know a lot about federal IT and federal stuff. You're quite involved in the D.C. area with a lot of federal programs. Tom is the co-host of the Federal Drive radio program with Amy Morris on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM in Washington, D.C. And this guy doesn't stop there. He also has a personal blog, Temin on Tech, at ttemin.wordpress.com. He is the editor-in-chief of fedinsider.com and is on Twitter at ttemin. Wow, that's a lot of stuff, Tom. Tell me a little bit about yourself. You know, just give everybody a sense of what you do there and kind of your circle of the federal stuff.
Well, the big thing is, as you mentioned, hosting a weekday 6 to 10 in the morning radio show, and we interview a range of guests involved in federal programs, federal IT, federal policymaking. We have everybody from CIOs to members of Congress on the show, and we're part of a station that is dedicated to federal matters, and it's the kind of radio station that could only exist in Washington, and we have a big 50,000-watt signal, so you can hear it to the far corners of the Beltway. And then my Fed Insider newsletter is my analysis of what's going on in federal IT. That's published by a company called Hoskey & Company here in Washington, and we come out with it every 2 weeks. And so it adds up to be pretty busy. And I like to follow technology just because I think it's driving so much of the innovation happening in government.
Absolutely. And additionally to the, what did you say, 50,000-watt signal, you can also stream the segments online at Federal News Radio. In fact, I was listening to a really good one you had today about a huge initiative to digitize documents and stuff like that. So there's just some really good stuff that he has from the big picture thing. And I want to talk a little bit about, you know, I'm in the business of virtualization, okay, but I'm just trying to get a sense, you know, for the federal side of, you know, government and technology. Is there a big disconnect between, like, mainstream technology and what the government's doing, or is it pretty similar? What would you say?
Well, I think the federal CIO and a lot of the current crop of CIOs feel that the federal government is a little bit behind the private sector, and actually virtualization is one of those areas. But it's their interest is not virtualization per se, but the things that virtualization allows. And they feel that their infrastructure costs are too high, that there's too much duplication of servers, of software programs, that it's very slow to provision new users. In fact, thanks to legislation that's passed in the last couple of years, such as financial overhaul, we're seeing the creation of whole new agencies, like the Consumer Credit agency that's still kind of being formed. And just today, the federal CIO Vivek Kundra said, why should that agency have any infrastructure of its own? Why not buy everything it needs as a service? And so that's not precisely virtualization, but it's related to it. But they're looking for those agencies that do have infrastructure to consolidate and to reduce the number of federal data centers by about a third. There's a couple of thousand of them, and they think 500 or 600 could be eliminated and consolidated. And so going hand in hand with that is the idea to virtualize there so that you don't have to triple your acreage for the remaining data centers.
Well, that brings up a good point, because to an outsider, and I'm not at all by exposed to the workings of government technology generally speaking, but to the outsider, okay, you say federal government, so you think of a big organization. Okay, I think of a big organization. I have 5 or 6 data centers, but the number of data centers you mentioned, that's incredibly large. And on top of that, a lot of the organizations aren't necessarily connected, right? So one group of Senate, or one military operation, or one government agency, they don't share the same file server, email server, any of that stuff.
No, they don't. In fact, you'll find within some departments, say Homeland Security, which is, it seems like a long time to us. It was formed 8 years ago, but it's really not an integrated entity at all, and they're the first to admit it. And every year there's congressional oversight that comes out that says, yeah, you're not integrated yet. So there might be 20, 30, 40 financial systems running in Homeland Security among the components. There might be dozens and dozens of separate email systems among the components. And so what you're seeing now is, Veterans Affairs, and Homeland Security, they're starting to move to outsourced Gmail-type service, or SharePoint, type service. Microsoft has a big deal, and Google, they each have a big deal for a couple of 100,000 people to move to their platforms for federal email. And there's a lot that goes with that. You have to have facilities that are dedicated in the United States. They don't want their traffic moving on servers outside and so forth. But so, in that sense, they're catching up.
Right.
And as they get rid of those data centers, I think you're going to see a lot of virtualization. And I think you're going to see a lot of desktop virtualization because they want to get out of this heavy, thick client refresh cycle, which is very costly, and they want to have device-agnostic states for each user, and they want to have the ability to control the image for each user, and so virtualized user images or desktops is really the way I think that they're going to be starting to move in the next couple of years.
Well, that brings up a good point, because a virtual desktop environment also does one very important benefit. It keeps your data in the data center.
Okay. Yes, it does.
As far as generally speaking, end state on disk, it's of course displayed through display protocols or something like that to an endpoint device. It would be a ubiquitous device, but it would be quote accessed remotely. But in terms of data loss, that's also a big thing. So there's a lot of, I guess, opportunity. Is that a good way to put it?
Yeah, and for people that are in the virtualization business, you're seeing many, many more people and more vendors spring up that are offering infrastructure as a service and virtualization as a service. And it's not that there's that many brand new virtualization platforms being created, but the ones that are out there popular are finding more and more partners that are putting together different packages with those virtualization packages at the center of it, putting together bundles that they can offer as a service.
For sure.
I've seen a lot of new vendors that are just moving into that whole space.
Have you seen any organization or unit that is within the federal range of organizations that are really like ahead of their time or significantly ahead of the rest of the different organizations?
Veterans Affairs has come from behind, and they're very big in this off cloud servicing their email, so that's one.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the Defense Information Systems Agency, they have a cloud that's become famous as an application development cloud, so that you can quickly develop something as mostly federal developers, but contractors too, I believe, and you have a place to do the development without requisitioning servers and whole physical environments to house that in. So they have their race environment, their virtual cloud environment. That's considered one of the I guess poster children for this whole thing.
Yeah, cool. I mean, I think the application development, because I'm not a developer, but I know that even if you're interacting with test data or logging, that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The bits of code have access to data or trust zones that you might not want, floating around on people's laptops. It might be kind of the same issue. You don't want that trust zone floating in different uncontrolled environments. So it's kind of cool to see them on a true scale. I mean, most private industries don't get, don't hit the level of scale of some of these organizations. So it's kind of cool to watch them develop.
Yeah, and I would say that with respect to data center consolidation and the virtualization that will bring, we're still at the very, very beginning stage. It's kind of interesting. There's nothing new under the sun. In 1995, under the Clinton administration, there was a memo from Office of Management and Budget to consolidate data centers, and it was about 2,000 back then, and they got it down to some smaller number. But it creeps back up again. People always, want to build those empires, you know, and every time there's a new project, they build a new data center. So they're kind of going at it again. It's one of those things you have to constantly fight, like kudzu, you know, data centers.
Kudzu.
And that 2,000 number, by the way, that's only data centers that are bigger than 500 square feet.
Wow.
There's a lot of closets out there that are still going to be operating.
Well, and that's the thing. When I saw that some of those numbers were coming out, and then on top of that, then the number changed by a matter of 1,000 or 2,000. And I was telling another guy that I know, Jason Perlow, I said, probably the issue is revolving around the definition of a data center. You know, the size that you mentioned, maybe just a single server underneath a closet or in a closet, maybe that constitutes a data center. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of consolidation opportunity. I just, you know, it's got to be an incredible challenge. I'm sure there's a mix of products, vendors, and solutions, OSs. It's really a lot like what you might find in, like, a business acquisition situation. You know, like, you've got a company's acquired a number of smaller companies or something like that, and this organization's using this for this function, and that organization's using that. So, you know, general consolidation, application consolidation, data center consolidation, it's all kind of, I think it's really ripe, and on top of that, virtualization has to be central to that in the terms of the data center and some of the application things like the email and the collaboration tools that you mentioned.
Yeah, they're looking at, you know, email is an obvious one. Financial is another one, financial systems. Collaboration and citizen involvement tools. They're looking to deploy common apps that everyone can kind of rent instead of everybody growing their own. So, but right now the stage is they're putting together their plans for consolidation. By the way, it's also important to note that the single biggest data center owner is the Defense Department. They've got about 700 and some. So the rest are divided among everybody else.
Well, that would probably even include something on a ship, I would think, right? Well, I don't know, 500
again,
square feet.
It's 500 square feet, so but there's a lot of infrastructure right on the ground for the
That's
Department
true.
Of Defense.
Right. I would also imagine that, you know, the technology shipborne or, you know, on a mobile data center situation would have to be small by necessity, but, you know, just as important. I have a friend who works in shipping from, like, cargo shipping, and he has a doozy of a time, you know, administering and supporting that type of situation. So there's all kinds of challenges. It's a battlefield of sorts, I would say.
Yeah, and, you know, nobody likes to give up real estate. But I think, you know, the smart managers understand that maybe it's not such a bad idea to get rid of all that infrastructure. As long as you get the data for your mission and the applications, who you know, let somebody else worry about keeping everything running and keeping it up to date.
Yeah. Nobody likes the base supporting functions associated with infrastructure. Keeping the lights on, keeping the lights green. Nobody really cares about, I shouldn't say they shouldn't care about that, but.
Well, they care about it, but it's just a headache they'd rather pay for as a service than have cost of having it themselves.
Yeah. What you really want is the application available, the data you need, these are just fundamental cloud drivers. And the cloud can be to a corporation one thing, to a personal user like myself can be another, and to a large, you know, government organization can be yet another definition. So I think, yeah, it's actually kind of interesting, and like you said, I think we have a lot of opportunity that will really give us kind of an entertaining, or at least not entertaining, but just a very developing space in the future. In terms of, you know, aside from the government, what other things technology-wise, or aside from, you know, their consolidation opportunities, what other things technology-wise do you see going on with the, you know, federal IT space?
I think one of the biggest happenings is mobility. And it's taking many, many forms. One of them is there's a mandate now to have federal buildings all equipped with Wi-Fi, both for the use of the people that work in the building and also for visitors.
Really?
And we're also seeing the deployment of mobile endpoints to a lot of agencies that may not have had it before. I mean, the Interior Department is looking at iPads. I know that Housing and Urban Development, all the managers there have been given iPads. And they're still figuring out what, but the idea of a fixed governmental building with people streaming to it and then streaming home every day, that model's starting to erode a little bit because of the transportation costs and the commuting issues and the idea of green government, and also for continuity of operations. If you have mobile users where the state is in a safe server somewhere, then you have much greater resiliency in the case of a disaster. And also there's a new bill that was passed late last year, the Telework Enhancement Act, which is really pushing and pressuring agencies to offer greater numbers of their employees teleworking possibilities. So for all those reasons, you're seeing a big trend toward mobilizing and use of mobile devices, not just for email and phone, but for application endpoints.
Wow.
That's beginning to take place, but it's also driven by this idea of the consumer electronics moving to the enterprise. And that's the trend you're seeing both in private industry and in government.
Absolutely. First of all, I'm like, that's awesome. I think that's a great initiative. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be hurdle-ridden. You know, there's a lot of requirements that need to be met. You know, iPad, I'm not personally an Apple fanboy myself, but okay, it's a well-designed device. I'll give them credit for that. But that has to be probably exciting, really, for the experience side, okay? If I'm a worker, I don't want to drive to work, especially when situations come up, weather, traffic, or whatever. As an option, that would be great.
A lot of agencies are in the business of data gathering. Now, you could do data gathering on a laptop, but, you know, when you think about notebooks compared with some of the mobile devices today, they seem really clunky and dated, mm-hmm. and they have big, fat hard drives, which, increases the security risk. But if you have, not just iPad, there's some really serious competitors coming out, you know, with different platforms, Android platform, BlackBerry platform, and Windows platform. They're getting there. If you could carry something that light with only small storage enough for applications, coupled with 4G that's being deployed more and more throughout the country, then the data is just from that device right to where you actually want it, which is not on the laptop in the field, but at a data center where it becomes a product,
right.
Like Census.
Right.
And so Census is a big one, but many, many agencies do this kind of work, collection of geospatial information. Only your imagination limits the ways that can be used. So there's a lot of drivers, so I think mobility is going to really, really be big.
Wow, that's great, because I wouldn't have seen that coming, but I totally see the use case. That's awesome. Well, Tom, I've got a trick. Every podcast has its gimmick, okay? So my gimmick for you is something I call three views from you. I'm going to ask you three separate questions, all based in a point of time. So, Tom, as a technologist, as a guy, as just a person, what's the most interesting role or a story or something thus far in your career that you can share with us in the past?
Oh, golly. I would say the first time one of my publications went online.
Yeah, that is cool, isn't it? Yeah.
That was, I guess, around 95, maybe. And, just a year after the Netscape browser, you know, when we suddenly, those of us in publishing said, you know what, there's something here.
Mm-hmm.
And I barely knew how the whole thing worked, but I didn't personally put it online, but I gave the authority to one of my techie editors at that time. In fact, it's Sean McCarthy, who's very well known at IDC now as a federal analyst, but he was the first one to put Government Computer News online. I was the editor of that for 15 years. And so I remember he said, here, do this, you know.
Yeah.
There it was online. You know, it wasn't nothing like the sophisticated sites of today, but it was there for the world to see, and suddenly, you know, the viewing of our material was possible beyond the people, the 80,000 people we sent the print magazine to.
Yeah,
and I recall that as quite a moment.
Yeah, it was something, it was totally different than now, because, you know, like in my case, I had to go to the library to go look at something online, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So it was, in a way, more of a hassle. Now it's totally reversed.
Yep.
So Tom, currently right now in your work or your technology experience, you know, what's the most interesting thing you have going on currently?
Well, you know, I'm not that, I'm sort of a middle adopter. I don't rush out and get the latest things. But in my own work, I have really adopted cloud to the extent that I can. And I've started, you know, doing client work and so forth on online documents and trying to get out of that fat client space myself.
Sure, sure, that's it.
I think it's, you know, why should really anybody at home each computer is like a little utility, and I don't operate an electrical plant for the power in my house, and I don't operate a water factory, a water facility for the water in my house. What I want is water and electricity, and I don't really want to own terabytes of hard drives which crash, and operating systems which get corrupted, and everything else. And so I think for the individual, that's the greatest promise, and so I'm trying to see how much I can depend on the cloud and less on the infrastructure in my own house.
Cool, cool.
Which is pretty extensive, by the way.
Well, yeah, me too. I'm guilty. You say terabytes, and I'm like, I kind of shrugged a little bit, you know, a terabyte.
We all have four or five computers and, you know, lots of monitors. Suddenly you look under the desk, there's a lot of wires under there.
Absolutely. How about in the future, you know, a couple years out? What do you see as the most interesting thing coming in the future or down the pike?
Well, I really think that we are at the beginning of this whole super-duper mobile device idea. And, you know, each iteration gets us closer there, but it's light and it does everything. But yet it's simple in the sense that it has a solid-state drive or whatever. So I see truly ubiquitous computing with, and I think the thing the pads are bringing us, that ultra-light notebooks and netbooks and that thing did not bring us, is no booting. You know, you don't boot your telephone. You don't boot your refrigerator. You don't boot your car. But you still boot a computer.
True.
And I think that the idea of being able to check what's going on anytime without the overhead that is required of a traditional, you know, Mac or PC type of computer, I think that's what these mobile technologies offer. And it becomes, you know, the dream of the dial tone type of experience, I think, is really coming with these devices. And I think the deployment of 4G, you know, there's two major carriers now that have it, and it's not everywhere. Mm-hmm. But I think that's going to change a lot.
Well, heck, you know, I'm even a fanboy of 3G. 3G is pretty good. And so 4G will be great.
Well, if you've ever tried 4G, and I have, I tried the Verizon, which is in Washington, D.C., and it's wire speed.
Wow.
on your network, on your, you know, USB dangle.
That's awesome.
You know, they just have a little USB device, and you look at it, how fast things look. So what that causes is a lot of pressure on the big sites, because the funny thing is, you can tell how fast 4G is when you download a file, say an update, or a movie or something, or, you know, a song comes across in a split second instead of, you know, a minute or so. The problem is some of the big websites, you know, the Washington Post or something like that, they still take a long time to load, even under 4G. And the reason is you're getting a couple of hundred different image files from maybe 50 or 60 different servers from all over the place that aren't very well coordinated. So what this is going to do when we all have high-speed wireless access, show up the need to re-architect the sites being served up, so that once the pipe is no longer the limiting factor, but the crappy design of the web servers, then there's going to be pressure on people who operate those sites.
I saw a tweet this week that's right up that alley. It said, or maybe it was last week, it said, you can't hardware yourself out of a problem that you softwared yourself into, right?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Well, hey, Tom, I really appreciate your time on the podcast today. This has been a really good discussion. Everybody, again, if you want to follow Tom on Twitter, it's T. Temin, and I'll have links to all of his stuff in the podcast notes. And if you have any feedback on the podcast, you can send an email to podcast@veeam.com. Tom, thanks for being on the show.
It's my pleasure. Good talking with you.
Cheers.